But so there are four constitutions. Two constitutions are people who are born with a cold, damp spleen. And the other two are people who are born with a hot, dry spleen. This is the first fundamental difference.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Geological, the podcast that curates East Asian medicine and methods through the power of conversation. There's a potency to questions that are not easily answered, the ones that require living into, the ones that serve as guideposts, that are reliable traveling companions in a strange land. It takes trust to stay present when feeling uncomfortable. There's a kind of belonging that goes with answers. It's a nice place to rest, a way station, a moment in time you can take your shoes off and settle with comfort into a feeling of security and relief. Relief from the attentiveness that uncertainty calls forth. Potent questions will more likely than not disturb you a bit. Not in the agitated way that slow traffic does, but more in the way that certain social norms feel like a pebble in your shoe. Potent questions might make you annoying to your family and friends. They are the kinds of questions that have you moving not across town, but across the country. The ones that create or ruin your reputation. The ones that might bring you home to yourself, but then again, could leave you adrift at sea. Going on 30 years now, I've had the question, how does acupuncture work? It seemed innocent enough at the time. An odd medical technology from pre-modern times? How complicated could that be? All these years later, I still have the question. Every day that I go to work, I investigate it again. It's been a good traveling companion. At times, the only familiar friend when walking down a street whose name I can't pronounce, or finding myself in a restaurant with food full of foreign spice. Potent questions shape your destiny. They are a ping from the future that might exist. They time travel with you, like poems that speak with the words of your ancestors and children. There's a sacred madness to them. Potent questions are like the answer given by an oracle. They open slumbering potentials. They invigorate the mind and also enliven the spirit. The world has answers for sale. And for sure, the certainty that they promise, it's enticing. But answers rarely carry the limit-shattering potency of questions. Most patients, they have some kind of potent question because whatever troubles have them walking through your door, it's part of an inquiry. Regardless of whether it's knee pain, relationship struggles, or the thoughts they only allow themselves to consider in depth at 4 a.m, there's likely a potent question. And while often enough our patients are looking for an answer, what they might need even more is the potency of an inquiry that enlivens their life. East Asian medicine recognizes the central role that food can play in our health and well-being. Often enough, when considering constitution, we lean on the archetypical resonances of the five phases. But beyond the elements, we can view the body through the Korean satsang system of Shaoyin, Shaoyang, Taiyin, and Taiyang correspondences. In this conversation with Chagwang Sunim, we explore the Korean satsang constitutions along with five-phase configurations as revealed in a person's Bazi chart. We'll also touch in on the satsang relationship between the spleen and the kidney, and also the lung and the liver. There's some interesting things to see here. If you're into the influence of food on our health, you're going to love this conversation. We'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. These conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Worried that an EMR is too complex for you? Jane has friendly and knowledgeable support. Mayway Herbs is celebrating the 55th year of their family business. You're invited to make use of their vast library of resources. Are you concerned about the health of Mother Earth? AccuFast Needles is doing something about that. You can too. And later in the show, Ancestral Sturman offers up a sinew treatment, and the folks at Blue Poppy have something special to share as well. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Geological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Yvonne Lau, president of Mayway Herbs. Our family business turns 55 this year, and we wouldn't have gotten this far without the love and support of our community. We're truly grateful and promise you that we'll continue to work hard to support you and your practice. Please visit Mayway.com to find the perfect Pumsar brand formula or formulate your own in our dispensary. Our site also has lots of articles, videos, and herbal recipes for you to explore. And tune into our podcast, Chinese Medicine Matters, for insightful discussions on all things TCM. Learn about treatment strategies and powerful herbal remedies. As we welcome the month of May, our focus is on women's health. Our newsletter articles and podcast episodes this month will highlight different aspects and unique challenges women face. So subscribe or tune in. And if you're a practitioner, get a discount on our women's health formulas this month. Just visit Mayway.com. This season and every season, trust Mayway Herbs for your health and wellness needs. And thank you for supporting Real Chinese Medicine.
I love how technology can help to automate my office, and I want to share with you my favorite tool for doing so, Jane. Jane is a clinic management software in EMR with a human touch. Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get software, you get a whole team. Included in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live. If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team. And be sure to mention the code CHEOLOGICAL at the time of sign up for a one-month grace period on your new Jane account. I don't know about you, but sometimes I take a step back and marvel at my acupuncture needles. I mean, they're the world's simplest medical tool. A sharpened wire and a handle. That's it. And with this simple tool, hundreds of health conditions can be resolved. I love it. What I didn't love was the amount of packaging waste I generated at the end of the day. But that has now changed too. Ever since I switched to AccuFast Earth-Friendly Needles, I reduced my packaging waste by 90%. Not only are they a great needle, but the folks at AccuFast plant a tree for every two boxes of needles I use in the clinic. By switching to AccuFast Needles, you'll be helping patients, planting trees, and joining a community of practitioners changing the world. Like our simple needle, being a part of the solution, it's simple too. Visit AccuFastNeedles.com/geological to learn how. Jiaguan Sunim, welcome to Geological.
Thank you, Michael. I'm very happy and honored to be here.
What makes you so happy to be here?
I just enjoy talking about what I do, and I've heard a lot about you, and I'm really just delighted to have an opportunity to have a chat with you.
I'm thrilled to have you here. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about some Korean medicine, food therapy, a thing that some of our listeners might be familiar with, but most probably are not, which is the satsang. It's a constitutional way of making sense of a human being and their propensities toward wellness or their propensities toward illness. And it's something I've looked at a little bit over the years. And I had someone on some years ago and we talked about it. I always like getting some different perspectives, you know, to really dial something in. So tell us a little bit about yourself, what brought you to this kind of a practice, and a little bit about the satsang.
Well, I came to satsang constitutional medicine rather surprisingly and indirectly, because I originally found myself in South Korea, where I went to study Zen Buddhism. I was living and practicing in a monastery. I had ordained as a Buddhist nun and found that as I lived there over the years, my health was really deteriorating. The food there is very spicy, and I had always known that I didn't do well with spicy food, even though I knew nothing about constitutional medicine. And during my time there, I met a Korean monk named Hyunung Sunim. And as he got to know me and realized how unwell I was, he started talking to me about my body constitution and diet and started telling me some of the foods that I needed to stay away from in order to regain my health. And so that's how I first was introduced to it. He and I eventually ended up coming to North America, having a Zen center in Seattle, Washington, opening another Zen center in Berkeley, California. He was the teacher. I was his translator. And he was very keen on this Sasong constitutional medicine because it had also essentially saved his life when he was a young monk because he also didn't do well with spicy food and had a lot of struggles when he was a young monk living in the monasteries. And he eventually was able to resolve his health issues when he came upon a practitioner of Sasong constitutional medicine. And they gave him an herbal formula, which just completely turned his health around. So he was so impressed with that, that he decided he wanted to study the system so that he could independently learn how to take care of his own health. And it made such a difference for him that he realized it not only brought him back to good health, but it created a kind of internal balance that actually affected his spiritual practice as well. And he realized that it created a wonderful foundation of physical health and emotional calm that really benefited his spiritual practice and allowed him to go more deeply into his practice. So when we opened Zen centers in the U.S., then he started teaching this to people who would come for meditation as well, saying, you know, it's important to cultivate the body as well as cultivate the mind because the body is the vehicle through which we practice, through which we explore the mind through our meditation practice. And if we're struggling with physical aches and pains, if we're struggling with chronic anxiety or depression, many things like this that people hope to resolve through their spiritual practice, they can actually resolve through a system like Sasong constitutional medicine.
That really makes sense. And as we're having this conversation and I hear you say it, I think to myself, oh my goodness, that's right. You know, it's funny, sometimes you don't think about something or it's rattling around in the back of your head and then you hear someone say something and you're like, oh, wait a minute, that's right. That piece about when the body is more in balance, whatever spiritual or meditative practice you're doing, it would have a tailwind instead of a headwind. And it seems, at least here in the States, maybe this is just my own delusional thinking, but it seems here in the States, or in the West maybe, that we have this idea, if we get our spiritual thing together, if we get our mental thing together, well, the body's just going to come along. And we prioritize and put the mind above the body, even at the same time that we say there's a mind-body connection. And what I hear you saying here is, well, the mind and body are entangled. The mind might be a bit of a mess. Well, get the body right, the mind will naturally follow.
Yes. And the body can put up a lot of obstacles in front of us when we're trying to sit quietly and go deeply into ourselves. Even as we begin our meditation practice in that way, the meditation practice itself starts to make us more aware of what all is going on internally. Our awareness heightens, and anything that we become more aware of in terms of our physical problems, little aches and pains, emotional states that we realize are there nearly all the time, sadness, depression, anxiety, anger, impatience. These all seem to come to the forefront more when we sit quietly, and they feel like more of an obstacle to us. So we think that mind over matter is the principle, but in fact, there are simpler ways to remove those obstacles. And when we are no longer distracted by those kinds of things, then we can actually go much more deeply into our true being, who we really are, outside of those things. And when mind, which is our normal intellectual, emotional mind, is trying to control or overcome intellectual, emotional mind, it becomes an endless battle. And for myself, I know when I started this practice of Satsang Constitutional Medicine in terms of just my own diet and changing the foods that I ate and realized how much my body, mind, being calmed down, then it allowed me to go more deeply into that place, which is more fundamental to body, mind.
You use the phrase, the body is the vehicle through which we have our practice. And when I think of vehicle, I think of an automobile. Okay. And I can remember having some really crappy cars at certain points in my life. They'd rattle when you get above the speed of 50 miles an hour, and they, you know, they were loose, and it did not make travel pleasant. Not like the car I have now. I've got a nice car right now. You know, it turns on as soon as I push a button, and the seats are heated, and it's quiet. It's nice to go down the road, and it's quiet. It's like when the vehicle is running well, and it's solid and stable, oh, travel's a real joy. But if the vehicle's a rattly old thing, it's not so great.
That's right. And you're always worried something bad's going to happen. And you can't enjoy the scenery.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, let's dive into taking care of the vehicle here. Satsang. Tell us a little bit about it.
So, Satsang originated in Korea in the 1800s. It was developed by an Oriental doctor by the name of E.J. Ma, who lived in the 1800s. He was born in the 1830s, died around 1900. He was a practitioner of traditional Korean medicine, which I haven't studied myself, but I understand it's very close to Chinese medicine. The Koreans learned this from the Chinese and then sort of developed their own style to a certain degree. And during his time practicing medicine, some kind of pandemic came through the country, through the villages where he lived, and he had...
As they do from time to time. It really messes things up, right?
We can very much identify with that.
Yes, we can.
And he had two patients come to him. One was a woman, a grown woman, I believe in her 30s or 40s, and the other was a young girl, I think around 10 or 12 years old. They both had these same symptoms of this illness. And he had an herbal formula that he experienced was fairly good at alleviating the symptoms of this virus. And so he gave the same herbal formula to both patients. The woman responded well to the herbs and recovered. And the young girl did not respond at all well to those herbal formulas. And she continued to get sicker and sicker, and the little girl died. And this impacted him greatly because he thought, now I have two people coming to me. They have the same illness. They have the same symptoms. I gave them the same medicine. And yet they responded in completely opposite ways. So why is this? He realized there was some factor that he wasn't considering. And this is what first motivated him to explore how are people different. Obviously, these two people were very different, and what they needed for treatment was different. And that was the beginning of his exploration, where he looked into different constitutions, and he eventually developed a system of four constitutions and figured out ways in which they were different and what kinds of treatments they needed. The primary difference is that one constitution, or what, so there are four constitutions. Two constitutions are people who are born with a cold, damp spleen, and the other two are people who are born with a hot, dry spleen. This is the first fundamental difference. And then he also, in his studies and explorations of seeing how people differ, when he had the opportunity, he would dissect a corpse and look at their internal organs. And he discovered that some people would have, say, a much larger liver than other people. Some would have a larger lungs, larger kidneys or whatever. Other people have particularly small certain internal organs. And then he realized that not only was the cold spleen or hot spleen a difference, but also some people were born with a liver that had a strong energy, or a liver that had rather deficient energy. And so he began to delineate the constitutions in that way as well. And that, along with his experiments with giving them herbs, changing their diet, seeing how foods have different energies according to the five elements. So this is all based on five element philosophy of ancient Taoist medicine. And then he began to develop programs for each constitution, both in diet and in Chinese herbal formulas.
That's interesting. A couple of things really catch my attention. First, very unusual that someone in Asian culture would do dissection.
I suppose.
Yeah, that's a little bit unusual. It's usually more associated with people in the West. So interesting that in his quest to try to understand why the girl died and why the woman lived, you know, he went this far, and curious too to find out, you know, the size of the different organs. That can make a great study for someone who's in school now, in terms of like looking at, you know, pathology and seeing if there's modern correlations to this kind of thing in certain diseases, right? That would lend itself very, very well to someone's dissertation or, you know, doctoral program. But the thing that strikes me as a practitioner of Chinese medicine, we so focus on that fundamental aspect of earth, right? You look at the five phases, you could put earth in between fire and metal, or you could put earth dead center in the middle of all the elements. I tend to think of it as dead center because, well, it's just the way I think about it. It's just the way that I've gone with my particular way of doing medicine. And here he is, he's looking at constitution. Have you got yourself a damp, cold spleen or a hot, dry one? That seems like a not bad place to start with. Hey, what kind of person are you? Are you a happy purring kitty? Or are you a nervous skittery kitty? You know? So people listening to this, probably Chinese medicine practitioners, we have ideas of what a cold, damp spleen looks like. I'm not sure we have an idea of what a hot, dry spleen looks like. Can you tell me a little bit about what you would look for to make this first basic determination?
Well, Hyunung Sinim discovered that the most accurate and efficient way to determine that is by looking at a person's five-element natal chart.
So not necessarily looking at their body just as they stand in front of you.
Exactly. E.J. Ma, when he was developing the system, he tried to find physical external characteristics that could show him the person's constitution, the fundamental constitution of, do they have a cold, damp spleen or a hot, dry spleen? And he made many descriptions of their physical characteristics, their emotional characteristics, personality characteristics. He tried to use blood type, or I'm not sure if they even were typing blood in those days, but in more modern times, they tried to use blood type. And when Hyunung Sinim studied this system, what bothered him the most was even those descriptions do not still give you a really accurate map of how to determine someone's constitution in that way. So the five element charts he found give an accurate description. We can see their constitution accurately. Is their spleen hot and dry, or is it cold and damp? It shows very clearly once you learn how to interpret the five element chart.
So certain characteristics that we'd be used to thinking about, I think most Chinese medicine practitioners very comfortable understanding what a cold damp spleen is. A person's probably pudgy, they've got loose stools, a lot of borborygmus, they don't digest well, you know, they probably maintain water in their system, things like that. Fat, puffy tongue, maybe somebody with a, you know, more dryness, they'd be skinny, you know, and a little hyperactive, something like that. Do some of those basics carry water, or is it still a matter of...
They do sometimes. There are some people who fit those descriptions, but I've also seen people with a hot, dry spleen look exactly as you described as well. Someone with a hot, dry spleen, if they eat a lot of warming food, the warming food causes weight gain. You can see people tremendously overweight, but they have a hot, dry spleen because that's what warming foods do for them. And warming foods are very, very popular in our society. Everyone eats them. If their kidneys, someone with a hot, dry spleen generally will have deficient kidney, or kidney functioning is very poor, in which case they could start to retain water from poor kidney functioning, deficient kidney energy.
Okay, so they could look a certain way. They could look like a cold, damp spleen person because they're actually a dry, hot spleen. They've been eating foods that make that worse, that causes weight gain. They might have a predilection towards some kidney deficiency, so they're not metabolizing water. So they look like the cold, dry. They will present that way when they're in their unhealthy mode. I suspect a healthy mode, though, they're probably thinner.
Yes, healthy mode for someone with a hot, dry spleen, healthy is to be slim because their energy likes to circulate quickly. Having hot, dry core of their body, their energy likes to be active. It likes to circulate well. And when they start gaining weight, then it can't circulate well, and that can lead to further health problems. I guess the one thing I could say that is generally different, and again, there are exceptions to this. There is no hard and fast rule, but generally speaking, people with a hot, dry spleen, because the core of their body is hot and dry, that heat tends to rise up and sit in the upper half of their body. People like that have a sense that their energy is, they almost don't know how to express it. But if you ask them, where does your energy tend to sit? Where do you feel sort of the heaviness of your body? And they'll point to their chest and shoulders. For them, it's almost the lower body is so deficient in energy that it's almost like it doesn't exist. Like their whole focus of who they are is in the chest and shoulders and upper back. Whereas someone with a cold spleen, the core of their body is cold and damp. Cold sinks downward. So their energy tends to sit in the lower half of their body, and they can feel that as well. They feel more of a sluggishness in their hips, their buttocks, their legs, their feet. They can feel a heaviness in that part of their body. I have seen exceptions to that. I have seen someone with a cold spleen who has deficient kidney energy and strong fire, and perhaps even their personality is fire. And so they're very active, impatient. talk fast, rush through their day, and they don't look like someone with a cold spleen. But only the five element chart shows us, this is a person with a cold spleen. They happen to have deficient kidney as well.
We're going to get into the five elements here in a moment. I want to make sure that I've got my head around this spleen hot and dry. You say that's often paired with a deficient kidney?
Yes. Generally speaking, when stomach, which is spleen, stomach, which is the earth element, if it's hot and dry, earth absorbs water. Or they say earth defeats water. And so the hotter the stomach spleen is, the more this will deplete the water element, which is the kidney energy. And if they're eating a lot of warming foods on top of that, constantly further heating the stomach spleen, the kidney just gets more and more deficient until they change their diet.
Because they're sucking that kidney water into the earth, burning it up.
Yeah, it's like I describe people's constitution as their body landscape, the five elements being taken from nature. Say, when you have a hot, dry spleen, it's like internally you have a desert landscape. And just think of how much water there is. Even if it rains, that water will be depleted very quickly as soon as the sun comes up in the desert. The heat, that dry earth, will absorb the water very quickly.
Hello, everyone. Anne Cecil Sturman here. A working knowledge of the eight extraordinary channels from the unbroken oral tradition of acupuncture is valuable beyond words. The power of these channels is tremendous if the practitioner has well integrated diagnostic, theoretical, and practical skill. You'll be familiar with Dumai, the governor channel, or the Sea of Yang, the primal reservoir of Yang, which ultimately finances all movement and growth. But this channel also governs the ability to self-determine. The psycho-emotional presentation of your patients can be matched to a classical activation of this channel, clearing impedance in the free flow of Yang Qi to body, mind, and spirit. I'd like to share with you the marvelous potency of the Du channel in a full-length live treatment video from the seminar I taught last year in Melbourne, Australia. It's at annececilsturman.com/sinews2024. Click on the Jump to Free Teaching button or see the link on my Instagram page at annececilsturman. Thanks, Michael. Back to you.
Right. And likewise, if the spleen is cold and damp, you're going to have more fluid, more excess in the kidney as well. So in a way, this is about water metabolism.
That's certainly one aspect of it. Yeah, the relationship between spleen and kidney is one of the fundamentals of the constitutional system.
I know that I've seen charts where we think of, in Chinese medicine, we think of the Liu Jing, like the six different levels. There's Tai Yang, Yang Ming, Xiao Yang, you know, that whole thing. But with the satsang, there's just four. There's like lesser yang, lesser yin, greater yang, greater yin.
Yes. Although in the greater yin, there are two. There's greater yin with a hot spleen, and there's greater yin with a cold spleen. So there's actually five. E.J. Ma listed it as four main constitutions because he took it from the I Ching. He started his whole philosophy from the I Ching of starting with one. The one, he started with the principle of one, and one divides into two, yin and yang. And then each yin and yang divides again, so then you have four. That's where he established the four constitutions originally.
That makes sense. I can see how that would work. Tell us a little bit about the lung and the liver.
So this is another aspect. This is particularly related to the greater yin constitution or the greater yang constitution. So because lung energy, which is metal energy, governs over liver, which is wood energy. How those two are related to each other will change your constitution. So a greater yin constitution is one where lung energy is deficient and liver energy is excessive. And that creates imbalance for both internal organs because by nature, lung energy needs to govern over liver. And if lung energy is too weak,
the kids are running wild.
Yeah, the parent is too weak and sickly. The child is a big, strong teenager and does whatever it wants. And that creates a kind of imbalance that for him created a different constitution. And in terms of using herbal formulas, even if they have a cold spleen, they still need a different set of herbal formulas than someone of a lesser yin constitution has cold spleen, but liver and lung energy are more equal. And so there is that. And then the greater yang constitution is just the opposite. Lung energy is excessive. Liver energy is deficient. So that lung energy, instead of just balancing liver, it actually ends up attacking and weakening the liver because the controlling influence is too excessive.
You mainly work with food. You've mentioned herbal formulas. Do you work with herbal formulas very much or mainly food?
I mainly use food. I find that a lot of people, the majority of my clients, do very well if they follow the nutritional program that I create for their body landscape. If they follow it as instructed and are able to avoid the foods that they need to avoid, most people respond very, very well. Their symptoms respond very well. And in most cases, herbs are not needed. But there will be the occasional person where their symptoms are very chronic or their symptoms are coming from a lot of energy blockage, meridians are blocked, and food alone doesn't have the potency to establish the kind of balance that's necessary for the symptoms to heal. And in that case, we will use Chinese herbs. Hyunung Sinim is the herbalist. I consult with him. I give him their five element chart. I give him their symptoms, and he tells me the formula that will be suitable for them. So we work together that way. I have the herbs here. I put them together in the formula he gives me. So we work that way.
Well, we often talk about use food as medicine. I think a lot of people listening to this conversation probably caught into that, probably think that's a really good idea if you can do it.
Yes. Food is very potent. The energetic characteristics of foods has a tremendous impact on our body, much more than we might realize.
Well, it's something we're doing several times a day. It's an influence that we're constantly imbibing. So on one hand, the influence is sort of slow and moderate. But on the other hand, done over time, it can be very profound. It's almost like saving money. You know, if you just put like $100 aside every week, starting at the age of 18, you know, you could retire by the time you're 50 because of compound interest, right? It that idea that because you do get that compounding of effect over time, it becomes very, very potent. But it takes time to have that potency.
Exactly. And depending on the person, it can take a few years, even a few decades, before their health starts to deteriorate. And by that time, people simply chalk it up to, oh, it's just old age. I'm getting old. I expect to have these symptoms as I get older.
You're not buying it. It doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be like that. If we understand what foods really support our own internal energy makeup, then and just give our body those foods, the body thrives and functions very well. Now, people who are born with plenty of energy, they have good stamina, their body can withstand or throw off the effects of the foods that don't work for them for quite a long time, or they get little minor symptoms that they ignore But then there are people who were not born with such tremendous energy or strong stamina, and that makes their body a lot more sensitive to whatever they give their body that doesn't work for their constitution. So I have many clients in their teens and 20s, you know, who are already experiencing sometimes a long list of health symptoms because either their constitution is a very sensitive one or just they don't have the strong energy that some people do. And it affects them emotionally as well. And then the combination of the emotional struggles as well as the physical struggles make their body really rebel to anything that doesn't really fit their constitution.
Well, I'm one of those more sensitive people, so I get it. You know, I didn't choose it. It's just the way I was. I've got a question. This might be a little provocative, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So you talk about people that are more sensitive. I don't like using the term weak, but they might not, you know, they're not as strong, okay? And that can affect you physically. It can affect you psycho-emotively. Something that I've noticed with younger people, and I'm thinking about, like, my daughter who's 19 and, like, her cohort that she, you know, that she's known in high school and now going to college with. A lot of these kids, a lot of them, have some kind of mental health diagnosis. Many of them are on some kind of psychoactive medication. They're proud to have a mental health diagnosis. It's almost a badge of honor. Now, I look at that and go, you're 18 or 19 years old, and you're happy that you've got a depression diagnosis? Is there something about the food? Is there something about our modern lifestyle? It's worrisome to me that young people increasingly have mental health issues and they seem to be okay with it.
That's interesting. I hadn't really heard that. Also, ADD is very commonly diagnosed now. And I have seen many people find their emotional state really changes when they follow their constitutional diet. It can be a result of a simple internal imbalance that is not being corrected.
And sure, and a lot of them have food sensitivities as well.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So we're back to spleens that are not working correctly.
Yes. So spleen governs the brain, right? The way our head feels, the way our brain functions is very much governed by spleen. And if it's off balance, it can either cause, you know, cold, damp spleen can cause foggy headedness, poor functioning. Also, if there's poor flow between stomach and lungs, if there's blockage there, that can cause a sense of the sort of the synapses aren't working properly, that you can't think quickly, you get bogged down mentally. All of that can happen if you open up that circulation.
Tell me more about a poor flow between spleen and lungs.
If lung energy is deficient or blocked itself in some way, then energy flow from stomach into lungs will not occur in an efficient way. When lung energy is deficient, if you are born with deficient lung energy, then it's almost like the energetic entranceway as energy tries to flow from stomach to lungs. The entranceway is small, so it has difficulty getting through. It'll back up and stay in the stomach too long, can create problems for the stomach. The lungs don't get the nutrients, the energetic nutrition that it needs from the stomach. And that can eventually even affect the way our brain feels, the way our thinking works, in terms of the efficiency of our thinking.
Now, this is interesting to me. You just said the energy of the stomach going into the lung. Often, and again, I'm thinking, I don't know Korean medicine. I know a little Siam acupuncture. But often, it seems, in our trade, we're thinking more of the yin organs than the yang organs. So often people would say, oh, you know, spleen energy going into the lung. But I heard you say stomach. And that's interesting to me, because in the Siam acupuncture system, the lung is connected not to the large intestine. I mean, it is connected to large intestine, but in the Siam system, lung and stomach are counterbalanced organs, yin and yang.
Yeah, so in the Sasang system, stomach, spleen are considered as one. They are both the earth element. And if you look at the cycle through five elements, earth flows into metal. So the energy of the, my teacher always referred to it as stomach, spleen. Stomach, spleen energy flows into lungs. That's part of the cycle. And when it can't flow into lungs efficiently, then it can create problems for either organ.
Of course. So I was just trying to ascertain here, when you said stomach, was that a shorthand for earth or spleen stomach, or was there something very specific about stomach?
Well, that was shorthand for earth element, right? Yes.
It just connects with that Siam thinking that I have. Anytime I hear someone connect the lungs and the stomach, I'm like, ooh, tell me more. But yeah, those five elements. Okay, great. Maybe this would be a good moment to turn to the five phases and the Bazi and the birth chart and bring that in. I happen to have an app on my phone because, you know, it's 2023 as we're speaking, and almost everything's on a phone. It's amazing. Like the Library of Alexandria is in my pocket. I have an acupuncturist made this and sent me a copy. It'll tell you your birth chart. It'll tell you what you got and what you don't got. So how about we talk about me for a moment as a way of understanding this? So I've got my chart here. I'm happy to tell you I'm balanced in wood. I'm balanced in fire. Okay?
What we use, the five element charts that we use, is the ones that give you the Chinese characters. Because there are, for earth, there are four different Chinese characters all representing, that's on the bottom, six. There are six different Chinese characters representing earth. So if you can use an app that gives you the actual Chinese characters, then that tells me more, because I need to know what type of earth you have. Do you have winter earth? Do you have spring earth? Do you have summer earth? Autumn earth?
I don't know. I just know I've got 43% earth, according to this.
Okay.
But yeah, which earth is it? That's a great question.
There are many online websites that will give you the Chinese characters. So the actual, you know, the eight, there are eight characters to a natal chart. So two each for year, month, day, and time. And where they're located in the chart makes a difference, as well as what qualities of each of those elements you have.
Okay, so this is like the four pillars.
Yes.
Okay, I'm scrolling down to the bottom here and putting on my reading glasses. Because I can see that, I mean, I can see what I've got by the hour, day, month, and year.
Okay.
Would that be helpful?
Yes. Do they give you the Chinese characters?
It does not. It just tells me that my hour, I've got a lot of Yang, Fire, Dragon. But no, it doesn't give me the characters. Okay. Well, maybe this won't be as useful as I thought it would. But tell us a little bit then about how you do use this. You know, again, I'm in very rough terms. I've got a lot of earth. I don't know what kind. Balanced wood and fire. And now this connects with what we were talking about earlier. I have deficient water and I have deficient metal.
Interesting. So then there would be some difficulty of flow from earth into metal, since you have excessive earth energy and deficient metal, then there would be some difficulty there for that flow to happen.
Because I got all this earth and I've got a small little portal for it to go into metal. I could use a big metal gate, but I got a small little tunnel.
Yes. Uh-huh. I always compare it to building a dam across a river. And you just leave a little opening for the water to trickle through. The water's going to back up behind the dam and form a lake. So that's what happens to earth element when it can't flow into metal. It will back up and stay in the stomach spleen too long.
Now, with what little you know about me from all that, is there a way to get a sense of what constitution I might be?
No.
We need to really have a full BOTSA chart.
Yeah, it would only be a guess because I have seen both yin and yang constitutions with a lot of earth energy. And just because they have a lot of earth energy doesn't necessarily mean they are a yang constitution. It can, but it depends on what type of earth it is, where it shows up in the five element chart, where the fire is. All of that can determine.
In recent years, the Sa'am acupuncture style has generated significant interest and a loyal and growing following. In the Sa'am approach, a precise diagnosis leads to a four-needle treatment to address the five element and six qi imbalances in the body. The four needles target the controlling and generating cycles. It's common using this method for the needle sensation to be stronger than in many other styles. Thus, the choice of needle becomes important. The Unico brand of needles lends itself to both strong and gentle techniques. These superior needles are made of uncoated Japanese surgical stainless steel and feature the best guide tube on the market with its unique beveled edge. Additionally, Unico needles have a tensile property that helps with freehanding needles into Jingwell points and allows you to more easily feel the arrival of qi. Blue Poppy is the exclusive importer and distributor of Unico needles. Use the code QI2024 to save 10% off Unico needles at www.bluepoppy.com. You'll be glad you did.
When I think about constitutional types, I think this is lazy thinking on my part. One of the things about constitution, first of all, I think it's very powerful and helpful. But secondly, I often think it's kind of a shorthand. Like, if I can figure out the constitution, I'm already halfway home to knowing what to do, right? So there's that. But I keep thinking, oh, it should be, you know, somewhat easy to figure out constitution. But what I'm hearing from you is it's not just a matter of look and see. I know systems where sometimes it's look and see, or you know, you kind of get a sense, you listen to how they talk, or you know, the color of the face, and you know, all these things. You're saying that birth chart is absolutely key to understanding what's going on. Looking at the body maybe will help you, but if it's an unhealthy body type, if the body's already unhealthy, it's not going to be a reliable indicator.
That's right. And there are so many variations within each constitution. You know, with there only being the four or five constitutions, take any one constitution, there's so many different varieties and variations that are possible. The only common denominator is the hot spleen or the cold spleen. Everything else in terms of the other internal organs can be a variable. And that will show up differently in terms of how that person acts, how they talk, what they look like. It can vary a lot. And a lot of our physical characteristics are something we inherited from our parents. This has nothing to do with our constitution. So, you know, if you have two parents who are both tall and thin, then you're probably going to be tall and thin also, regardless of your constitution.
Okay, so help me out here. This is interesting. I thought our constitution was that build of our body. At least that's the big piece of constitution. What you look like, what you sound like, what you act like.
Yeah, that's originally how E.J. Ma described it. That was his best effort. But he did say towards the end of his life in one of his books, he said that he felt that he was still developing the system, that it still needed improvement, and he hoped that future practitioners would continue to improve on it. And I was actually just talking with Hyunung Sinim yesterday on the phone, and he was saying how he feels that he's gone even deeper into the principles and seen even more deeply all the things that you can see through the five element chart, and seeing not only their constitution, but personality, emotional things, even mental states that can affect their health. And I said, are you going to write a book about this? He said, well, eventually. But he and I have been using the five element charts to see constitution for 30 years. And over that time, we have seen so many different people. I mean, literally, I've worked with thousands of people, and to see so many, all of the same constitution, say the lesser yang constitution, and they can be all shapes and sizes, all personality types. You just can't see that common denominator from outside characteristics.
Okay, that's a little bit of a mind-bending thing for me, having practiced for as long as I have and relied on that, often with helpful results. That said, there certainly are plenty of cases where, look, someone ticks the box this, and this way. They should respond to what I'm doing, and they don't. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So what I think I hear you saying is sometimes the outside will match the inside constitution, but don't be fooled. Sometimes it won't. How often would you say it matches the outside versus not? Is that a fair question?
You know, I don't look at that much. I don't pay a lot of attention to that. But I know in the early days when I started really using this on my own, you know, originally, for many years, I simply worked as Hyunung Sinim's translator, and we would do the consultations together with him speaking in Korean and me translating into English. And so I just kind of learned it by osmosis that way. And when I first started really fully practicing it on my own, I used to, you know, just try to, I'd notice people on the street and see if I could see what their constitution was. And over the years, I realized you just can't depend on that because there are so many exceptions. And I had seen so many exceptions over the years. Oh, look at this person. This person's lesser yang. They don't have that, you know, narrow hips and broad shoulder. They have very broad hips, and some people are prone to weight gain, others are not. And the longer I practice this system, the more I realize you really can't depend on that. It's risky to try and go by that.
That invites me into a little recalibration then on how I think about this. But again, it also helps me understand those cases where, you know, I'm banging my head against it. I think I know what I'm looking at. What am I missing here? That's always the question that goes in my mind. I got fooled. What did I miss? And maybe that Batsu, really understanding that birth chart, would give me some clues.
The five element chart just reveals everything. You can see their constitution. You can see which internal organs have deficient energy, which have excessive energy. You can see where the energy flows and doesn't flow. It just removes all the mystery. And it's a system that is teachable. You know, learning to interpret the five element chart does take some training. It's not something that you can just look at and say, oh, that looks simple enough. It does take some training, but it is teachable. And once you learn that, then it gives you so much insight into what is going on with that person. It shows you fundamentally where the underlying imbalance is that's giving rise to their symptoms. And then once you know the cause of the symptom, then you know how to rectify it.
I suspect this could be very, very helpful for people that do acupuncture.
Yes. for people who do acupuncture, and actually anyone who practices alternative medicine in any form, it really gives insight into what's going on with their patient.
Because we can use food, we can use herbs, we can use acupuncture, maybe some lifestyle changes as well.
Yes, even supplements. There are certain supplements, you have to start looking at supplements in terms of their energetic character. There are supplements that absolutely will not be effective for certain people because of their energetic character.
Mm-hmm. For example?
For example, calcium is metal energy. Someone who has osteoporosis, they've been told to take calcium, but their lung energy is tremendously excessive. That's why they have osteoporosis as they get older. Give them calcium, it throws their whole body off balance.
Now, how does too much lung energy translate into osteoporosis? What's the...
Lung energy also governs over the bones, large intestine, but also bones. Bones, teeth, nails.
Kidney.
Kidney to some extent, but in the Sasang system, lung energy governs... So the metal energy is the hardest and strongest of the five elements. And so it's seen as related to the hard aspects of the body, meaning the bones, the teeth, the nails.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. All right, that takes my usual correspondences of what's connected to what. It doesn't turn it on its head, but it opens a different lens to look at it through. Metal energy is hard, refined energy, aspects of the body. I could see how that would fit bones. What about the kidney then? Could you give me just a quick, very quick primer on the different elements and what they resonate with? We just talked about the lung with the bones and the teeth and the nails, the hard things. Can we just do a very quick go around here just to help people open up another lens of perspective?
Yeah. Lungs also govern over the skin. So they can be associated with skin issues. Kidney energy governs over the joints. Bones to some extent. In Sasang medicine, we consider kidneys and lungs both to be associated with bones. Kidney energy, particularly joints. And of course, in the whole lower body. Kidney energy, so the urinary system, lower back, reproductive organs. And in some ways, the lower abdomen. So in Sasang medicine, we consider kidney energy to govern over the bowel movements. So whether you have normal bowel movements, constipation, diarrhea, or loose bowels can depend very much on the functioning of the kidney energy. Also, so the whole lower body, legs, feet, so it can rule over if you're having restless legs. Of course, water retention, we all know that. Restless legs, leg cramps, also related to kidney energy. Liver governs over cholesterol levels, blood pressure levels, functioning of the thyroid, the immune system, and then, of course, the nervous system. Heart, fire element, well, small intestine, I think that's common to everyone. Heart, small intestine. Heart mainly related to circulation, how much heat. It provides heat for the body. Someone with a cold spleen, the heart or fire element is their one source of heat. If they have a cold spleen and very deficient fire, then they're going to be very, very cold and have very sluggish metabolism.
So boosting up the fire for those people, very helpful.
Yes. But first you have to warm the spleen. Warm the spleen first for about a month and then boost the fire.
So it can receive the fire?
Yes, so it can receive the fire. If you try to boost the fire first before warming the spleen or at the same time, try to do both together. Boosting the fire will generally result in symptoms of floating fire.
Because it can't be received by the spleen.
Yes.
You were talking about this earlier with too much earth not being able to go into metal. So you need to make sure things are opened up and receptive before you tonify its mother, so to speak.
Exactly.
That makes sense. That's not one of those moments of, oh, that's right. So often I'll look at something that's deficient and think, oh yeah, I'm just going to go tonify its mother. That'll fix it. I'll go get its mother to go ride herd on it, and then it'll be fine. but if it's not able to receive that influence, you could send all the love you want to someone who needs some love, but if they're not open to having a little love.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, you're just going to be annoying to them.
And also the other thing that can be misunderstood is when you see something that seems to have very low functioning and you think, oh, I need to boost that organ. Sometimes the low functioning is because that organ has such excessive energy. So sometimes poor functioning can be the result of excess rather than the result of deficiency. So that's where, again, the five element chart shows you, oh, this is why this isn't functioning well. I don't need to boost this. I need to reduce anything that boosts it.
I see. Because it's excessive, and so it is stagnated. It's not weak. It's stagnated.
It's overburdened. It's like putting too much air in a tire. It becomes the couch potato.
I love it. This for me is why I so love practicing this medicine, because it really does invite us into taking our ideology, I'm going to call it. I think it works like this. I've got my theories, which are helpful. They can orient you. But then the question becomes, how's it working in this person at this moment? Right? Something's not functioning well. Is it because it's weak? Or is it so overburdened and stagnated? It can't do anything. That's a very, very important distinction that I think I overlook too often and conflate stagnation with deficiency.
And if it's a condition that they were born with, in other words, that's the amount of energy that organ received at birth, it's something that doesn't change. It doesn't mean that next month it's going to be better. It will only change if we balance what nourishes it and what it nourishes so that we improve energy flow through that organ.
Okay. Maybe you should write the book. You've got the good English.
I am going to. I've actually started on working on a book because I need to write a book that Westerners can relate to. What Henningsen writes is going to be one that is more Eastern in flavor. I mean, and he's going to get down to the real nitty-gritty of the philosophy behind it. You know, he's a Zen monk. He's a spiritual practitioner as well. And so he's combining the depth of his spiritual understanding with going more deeply into these principles as well, as actually was E.J. Ma. E.J. Ma was actually a spiritual practitioner. He was a Taoist, and he believed in self-cultivation as a way to, as a contributing factor in staying healthy. So, but yes, I am starting to work on the outline of a book. I think it's very important. I want to see other people practicing this system because it is so helpful for people. And it so removes the mystery of so many symptoms that people experience. It tells you the why.
It tells you the why. You know, it's funny, before we got on to have this conversation, I'm thinking to myself, oh, four constitutions, this should be easy.
Yes. That's what I thought too in the beginning. I studied basic five elements and, oh, this is easy.
Yeah, this is easy. Watch this. Here, hold my cup of tea.
Human beings are complicated.
Yes, we are.
But this reduces it to a simplicity. When you see the basic foundation of what people received when they were born, then it removes a lot of the mystery and a lot of the complication.
He's threatening to write a book. You're in the midst of it. What if somebody wanted to learn more about this? Is there a way, or are you teaching, or?
I am going to be doing some trainings. Yes, I'm going to be doing some trainings next year.
Do you have dates for those?
I don't have dates at the moment. I am working on setting up a training as well. That's my one of my goals for next year.
It's on the to-do list for the Wood Dragon year.
Yes. Yes, good year.
Good year to do things like that.
Yes.
All right. Well, this is great. I came in thinking I understood a little, and now I realize there's a lot more that I don't understand. So I guess that's a kind of progress.
Yes. Well, it's like anything. The more you know, the more you realize you don't know. The more you explore and study, the more that is revealed. It's just a wonderful way of better understanding yourself and your clients, your patients, people around you. It even helps me understand my family, who are not the slightest bit interested in this. But, you know, it helps me when I look up their five element charts, it helps me to completely understand who they are, why they behave the way they do. You know, which helps you to be more compassionate also.
But I guess when you recognize where people have their stagnation and where they have their deficiencies, yeah, it can lead to more compassion.
And it's something else that the five element charts show is personality aspects. You know, why is someone a perfectionist? Why are they so stubborn? Why are they this? Why do they have so much anxiety? This sort of thing. You see there's a reason why. You see there's a reason simply from the energetic pattern they were born with. And I think that that's very helpful. It's helpful for people to know that about themselves. They can be more compassionate with themselves, about themselves.
That is usually helpful.
Yes. No more blaming.
Yeah, and starting with ourselves is a good place to start. Hard place to start.
It's a hard place to start, but it's eventually very fulfilling. You know, if we can be willing to take a good hard look for the sake of having a pathway by which we can change, those changes can bring great satisfaction, joy.
Okay. Well, I will make sure that your contact information is on the show notes page, because I suspect some of the listeners to this would like to know more, and they'll probably be in touch with you.
Yes, and I also offer a free informational call. If someone goes to my website, mybodylandscape.com, they can schedule a free call with me if they have questions, they want to know more about how this works, how a consultation would work. They're free to set up a schedule, a time to talk with me. And there's also a free ebook on my website that they can download that gives some examples of five element charts and what we saw in those charts and how people responded to diets. There's a little book there they can download as well.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for this time today. It has, I came in thinking this is simple. I'm going to get something I'm going to be able to use right now. And what I come away with is, oh, it's more involved, but that dance of how it's more involved, that to me is the essence of why East Asian medicine is as powerful and at times confounding as it is. So thank you so much for all that.
Thank you, Michael. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I always love when we touch back into the first principles in East Asian medicine, and also how those first principles come in different flavors, how they help us to dial in various perspectives, and how we can use these in service of helping the people who seek our assistance. Mostly, what I love about all this is we are working with a kind of source code. So really, the healing of our patients, it comes from them. Sure, we're involved, but we're not the source of change. We are not the reason for people's lives changing.
they are. Just like a gardener assists the plants in her garden, the flourishing comes from the innate capacity of the plant. Our job is to attend to the beauty and capacity of that which is ours to care for. Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.